What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show.
You're listening to Footy Prime, the podcast, with Danny DiCchio, Craig Forrest, and James Sharman. Today, we welcome Paul Pesquito and Dan Wong on the ones and twos, and me, Jeff Cole. Let's get this party started.
You know what I love about that intro more than anything, aside from the fact that there wasn't music, but was the fact that Jeff, who is a professional voice man, right? That's his choice. He's got these great pipes, but how he shitting himself before trying to pronounce Pesca-Solido. It was brilliant. So I think you did a pretty good job. You didn't nail it necessarily, Jeff, but it was pretty good. So we'll give that to you, man. It's no Border Patrol, but it's pretty good. Welcome to Footy Prime. And yes, indeed, we will be joined very shortly by Canadian legend and former roommate of Craig Forrest, Paul Pesca-Solido. That'll be coming up real short. Looking forward to that. But boys, welcome back. Football is getting ever closer. Obviously, we know we have Germany. We know we have the Korean League. But England around the corner, MLS around the corner, CPL around the corner. So I thought we'd start today's show looking forward, but also looking a little bit. I want to test Deitch and Craig here a little bit on the Premier League and what transpired so far. A real basic questions. We'll probably become a bit more involved in these questions as we get closer to the June 17th date, right? But I've kind of forgotten everything about what's going on in the Premier League, apart from the fact that that team in red's going to win it. So let me ask you, let's start with you, Craig. Currently in England, what is the top four?
Oh, that's a good one. I think Liverpool's winning.
I think, yep, you got that.
I think they got a few points on Man City. Chelsea is there, I'm going to say. No,
they're in there. They're in there.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't the order as well?
Taking his head for.
So you got Liverpool, City. You have Chelsea. But where is Chelsea? Third or fourth?
Four.
Who is joining them?
Four. Yeah.
Okay, who's third?
I can't remember.
It's been 3 months.
Leicester.
Leicester, yeah.
The shitty place in East Midlands. Leicester.
I saw Pesci did that one to me. And I thought, well, loser.
You wouldn't be right, though. That's pretty good, though. Yeah, Liverpool, Leicester. Leicester.
It's amazing, isn't it? How you just, like...
Goes. The information goes. Who's the bottom three, Deitch?
Bottom three? Easy. Come on. You're going to give me
I forgot two of these teams.
He's Googling it right now.
Yeah, no, yes, totally.
Fulham and Swindon.
Correct. My concern is, what was he typing with his hands are up there?
He was like, all clubs that DiCchio played for.
Do you remember these? Do you know in the bottom three?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you want me to tell you?
No, of course not.
Brighton?
Nope.
Brighton? Yeah.
No, they're not. Close. I mean, it's a coast. A coastal Watford town.
Let's get them down. Let's get.
No, Watford's playing better now. Where?
Bournemouth.
Yep. Bournemouth's at 18.
There's someone that's like, they're down already. I can't remember who it is. Right at the bottom.
Norwich. Yeah. And Villa's in second.
Villa's close with Brighton.
Second last.
Yeah.
So Bournemouth, Villa, and Norwich. Okay, let's make it easier. Who's scoring right now?
9-0.
What player?
Player is leading
the Premier League. Sport? Yeah. Not teams.
In scoring.
Yeah.
This
is really a sad state of affairs, boys. Jesus.
Isn't it? In weeks?
Months?
Months? Well, actually, it's been over a year, really.
Yeah, it seems that way.
It seems done anything on TV.
Yeah, that's true. Deitch, do you see someone there?
It's not Vardy, is it?
But yeah, he's got 19 goals. Two up on Aubameyang.
Yeah.
Salah's down 16. Guess who's fourth?
Give me a clue. Is he a striker?
Like a striker. Team? Striker. 15 goals. He's bounced around in clubs and has been injury ravaged in recent years. But a great season.
He doesn't play with a big club either, does he?
No, he did, though. He did.
I know.
I can't even.
He's tattered up, both sleeves full.
Yeah.
It's hard, isn't it? It's as if football didn't even start this year. They freaking 30 games or something.
Well, I was expecting them to cancel the season, for God's sake. What the hell?
Danny Ings.
Oh, Danny Ings, that's right.
Yeah. 15 goals. 15 goals.
When an England call up for him.
Yeah, that's right.
Those guys will be up the season continues, all those stats and stuff like that. I guess just be wiped out. You know, his strikers are like, hey, Danny, the other guy, it's all about goals.
That's it.
Very.
It's all about themselves. Right.
Yeah.
But even some of the managerial names, you know, you don't forget about them necessarily, but like Moyes at West Ham seems, you know, really fresh. Nigel Pearson at Watford, you know, remember that that move mid-season? Obviously, Arteta at Arsenal. We've been so removed from it for so long, and now you know, we're kind of building up again potentially for the restart. Mm-hmm. And it's just really right now, you know, when you're looking ahead to football for the first time in some time.
It is. I think part of that obviously is, and us not knowing much about this, is the fact that we've had a serious pandemic going on around us that is obviously taken away from any entertainment like football. But it's nice to see that it's got potential to come back, and let's hope that the disease stays away enough and continue somewhat normally in the world of sports.
Chris, are you going to take advantage of the option of having the crowd noise, the fake crowd noise, when you watch the games? You can obviously, in England right now, I know, and in Germany, you can make you want to have the canned, it's like canned laughter in comedy, right? Do you want to can fans noise, or will you go with the natural? What do you think?
I don't know. I'm going to listen to them both. Give it a try. It's very odd, though, because, I mean, you watch the German league, it is like a practice match in an empty stadium. It's like, all right, lemon aside, here we go, let's have a practice. The fans add so much to the actual experience, and do their best without it, but and they have to. But it's I certainly miss it. The atmosphere is massively important.
It is, and you know, from what I'm hearing and what I've seen myself, people are saying that the crowd noise actually does really add something, even though it's fake and it's done really well. I still don't think I'll use it. I'll definitely, like I said, give it a try. But it's like watching, you know, some cheesy 80s sitcom, you know, with the fake laughter. It doesn't work. It's crap. You know, you don't need it. But I'm really curious as to how it's going to work in England. How about you?
James, you'll be watching the first game of Liverpool. When they score, you'll be cranking that volume up.
That's for sure, yeah.
Jumping around the room.
There'll be someone screaming. That'll be for sure.
Yeah.
There was actually a podcast this week that I was kind of listening to, and he actually gave a pretty funny example. And he said, it's kind of when you were younger and you were sneakily watching a porno movie in your bedroom or on your laptop, and you had to turn volume all the way down because your parents or someone was in the next room. He said, in an empty stadium or with no cheer or no sound. He said, it's impossible to.
You're comparing that to porno?
It's a good analogy of playing with football. And shouts in the stadium, but I don't know. I just want to see the Premier League back on.
I don't care about audio, no, quite honestly.
No. I guess you then, and you won't go blind watching football, so as well. I suppose it's a positive thing.
Why we all wear glasses, Sean?
What's that?
Is that why we all wear glasses?
That's why we've all gone bald.
That's for sure.
Too much time on the computer. Jesus.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
This pandemic's killing my hair.
Yes.
And my broadband. Well, speaking of porn, let's bring on our next guest, shall we? Paul Priscus-Salido, welcome to Footy Prime. It's your first time on the show, I think, isn't it? Amazingly. I don't know how it's possible,
yeah,
but
it is.
But
I
welcome.
Don't know what I've got myself into. Thank you. What have I got into?
How's COVID treating you?
It's been great. Yeah, really, lots of fun.
Let me ask you: are you a supporter of football coming, or are you more like that? Let's just start again next season.
I'll be honest. I'm caught in two minds. Obviously, I'm delighted that it's back on. I want to watch something on TV. You know, I've gone through every box set going, and we all love watching football. So it's great that it's back on. But at the same time, you know, this is a serious issue we've got going on, and safety is probably more important. So I'm just kind of caught in between a little bit.
Now, will you be using the fake crowd noise, though? I'm sure, regardless of that, you'll watch the games. Will you have the crowd noise on or off?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I would speak to a friend. He's watched the game without it and with it. And I've watched a couple of the German games without it. And I got to say, it's awful. Really, I couldn't get into it. There's no football. It's entertainment. If you don't, it's like watching a reserve game. So I'll try it and see what it's like. But if it's like what you said, if it's like watching an old sitcom with the old voice in a box, and it'll put me off it altogether. But we'll give it a go.
Hey Pesci, what is your, speaking of German Bundesliga football, what is your impression about our fellow Canadian Alfonso Davies and how he's doing at Bayern Munich?
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's nice to see. It's nice to see. Actually, I made contact with him about probably 7-8 months prior to him going to Germany, because there was rumors that West Ham were interested, and I was told by West Ham to give him a ring and see what his situation was. And at the time, they were, I think they were saying something like 20 million. And I spoke to David Sullivan, said to me, you know, Canadian kid in Canada, get him for 5 or 6 million and 20 million quid. I was just like, you got to be kidding me. And I think he even said to the agent, I said, you're mad. You got no chance. The next thing he's turned up there, and David's running. Oh my God, what's a player he is. He looks sensational. Honestly, an absolute gazelle up and down the flank there. And it's great for Canadian football. It's nice to see. And hopefully we'll have a few more to follow. But he really does look sensational.
You know, it's amazing, isn't it, Patch, when, like, just the fact that he's in conversations about best player or left back in the world, like, just that he's in that conversation so quickly from moving over to Germany is astonishing. And it's an amazing story, the whole thing. Have a Canadian at the top has been great. The timing's been good too, because you got exposed to the English, you know, the English fans that don't watch a lot of international football. They're very, you know, Premier League centric. You like got exposed to Champions League for Bayern Munich when he was playing against Chelsea. That was terrific for exposure. And then the league is the first one to come back. You have no other choice. You're watching him week in, week out. So it's been great for him to be seen, and it's not long. He'll be the most recognized Canadian sportsman in the world, if he isn't already.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've watched a few video clips of him and him speaking, and he's still got that really nice Canadian feel about him, you know, very apologetic and self-deprecating. He seems like a real normal kid, and I hope that he remains that way, because he's got a huge future ahead. And like you said, sometimes it's good to be lucky as well, and he's been lucky as well. But what a player. He looks a hell of a talent.
Yeah, and also, Pesci, you know, I've always concerned about who's handling these guys too. It's important that they have good handlers, people that are actually really looking out for the best interests of that particular player. As we know, I know you're an agent for managers. It's important to build a trust with them. It's important to be loyal and clearly just working for them mostly. So I hope that's the case with Alfonso, because this is a situation for him as a young lad. It's, you know, it's great when things are going really well, but we know the TikTok, the social media, the negativity will eventually hit him, and how he deals with it will be very, very interesting and not easy.
No, absolutely. I think Germany is a different kettle of fish altogether. I Germany, they're protected more. I don't think they're into the limelight as much as the Premier League. if he ever does turn up in the Premier League, then that's when I think he has to be wary, because you know, it'd be very difficult in London, in England, as you guys know. But in Germany, good breeding ground, and I think the German players as well, they tend to be, I might be speaking out of turn, they be a little bit more professional in their way they go about the game. Mm-hmm. They behave themselves a little bit better off the pitch. So hopefully he stays there for a little bit longer, really learns how to behave himself on and off the pitch. And then who knows? But, you know, I think, like you said, his name is at the forefront, a lot of clubs at the minute, right across the world. So watch the space.
Guys, you could actually be talking about the first Canadian to pick up the Champions League this year with the way Bayern Munich are playing. I think that would be a little icing on the cake there, because I think the way
Bayern Munich's win it already.
Did he win it?
Dicchio's not going to put him as Canadian.
That's a cheap shot there to most
Lions, but yes, Owen Hargreaves is a Canadian.
Three Lions, but he's Owen.
And he did win it.
But, you know, do you think there's a concern, though, that Afonso won't get the appreciation in Canada that he deserves? I know, you know, football's getting its place. We're earning its place in Canada more and more. But there's still, you know, the mainstream media still are very scared of what's new. And football is still considered new. You know, we've seen how Steve Hutchinson has never got the respect he deserves in this country. It's extremely frustrating. Lou Marsh Awards, you know, ignoring him, not even in the conversation. Is there a concern, though, that Canada being Canada, still is this kid who's going to be a world-class footballer?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the case. It's a shame. And I think the Canadian Soccer Association are at fault with it, because they should be throwing him into the limelight. They should be discussing him like Michael Jordan territory, you know? This kid is sensational. He's playing in one of the best leagues in Europe. He's the standout player in this team week in, week out. He could go on to be one of the best players that Canada, well, he looks like he's the best player Canada's ever produced, but playing in an international stage. Why are they not using that? Whether it's his agent, whether it's the Canadian Soccer Association, this kid should be on commercials. He should be all over the place, because he's a good kid, a really good kid. He's really humble, just what young kids should look up to. And why not use him to improve the game of football in Canada? Why not?
I agree with you, Paul. And I think where the CSA, Canadian Soccer Association, is at the moment, looking back even only a few years ago when Sportsnet, PSN, having these games on terrestrial television, giving them that, at least that exposure from that angle. But they have to realize that they're in competition against the National Basketball Association, the NHL, football, baseball, because all those sports are pumping and their PR machines. Look what happened in Canada with the Raptors. Kids' exposure to basketball was amazing. So now we're not on mainstream terrestrial TV anymore. It's up to the CSA to basically do what you're saying and expose them, build these players up. Because I've even talked about it. Bayern Munich, from a social media magnitude, the size of this club that he's at, Bayern Munich have more social media followers than all the Canadian NHL teams combined. And we think our hockey's big here. It's not even close. It's massive. And you're right. We need to do a better job at the association, because you're in competition with the rest of the league. The competition for the entertainment dollar and sport, it's not easy in Canada.
No, yeah. But surely their job is to promote football. And what a better way to promote young kids playing than to have one of your own who's playing for one of the best team in Germany, lifting up trees week in, week out. Why are they not utilizing that? I don't understand that. Now's a perfect opportunity for them to get kids involved in football, because this is where you can be. This is what can do. And they're missing the train.
Get aggressive. It takes one phone call to go to a broadcaster, a podcast, whatever, and say, listen, hey guys, you know, we've got some media availabilities here. Now, do you want this guy? Be it Fonzie, be it Jonathan David, whoever it is, get aggressive. Get these names out there. Don't sit your ass and wait for these companies come to you, because quite frankly, they won't. Very few of them will, because they still don't understand football. So that's what frustrates me, that I get this feeling that they're sitting there waiting for people to come to them. No, come to media. Give us a call. Give other podcasts a call. Call TSM.
They don't know what they're doing. That's call DAZN. Sorry, guys. They just don't know what they're doing. They really don't. They don't know what they're doing. That's why Canadian soccer and the national team, that's why it's been a shambles for as many years, because people running it don't have a clue. This is an opportunity, huge opportunity. Get him involved. Get him signed up with a huge sponsor of some sort. Get him. He should be a household name in Canada. Without a shadow of a doubt, he should be a household name. But they're missing the trick. They don't know what they're doing. They really don't. They don't want to promote football. They don't want to promote anything. And I have this same argument all the time in bad books with them, but I don't care. You know, it needs to change. Change. We are going to be a third world nation in Europe, in world football forever.
Yeah, Pesci, I mean, you obviously moved over to England a long time ago. You know, that's your family's from there. But was there a point where in your career where, you know what, I'm not coming home anymore. This is now where I'm going to be. I'm now English, essentially. You know, my daughter's English, my wife's English. This is now it. And I'm going to be, more of a voice, perhaps, to get more motivations from people in Canada to talk about football.
I guess when you get married, an English girl who's the career she's mapped out for herself here, I knew halfway through being in this country that I wouldn't be heading back. And like you said, you have two kids, English kids. Where am I going to go? Listen, I love Canada. I'm proud to be a Canadian. I'm watching this Canadian Cardinal show on TV, and every time I watch it, I'm seeing the backdrop of snow and that. It makes me want to be back home, But England's my home now. I love it. And, I can't see me ever coming back for good. I think this is it. I'm going to stay here, and I'm happy.
Pesci, what is it like being married to Karen?
Yeah, it's rubbish.
I can't believe she still likes you.
Or does she? That's what I'm saying now. Listen, she tells me she does anyway. Now we've, how do you explain it? You know, you don't even think about the achievements and all that because she's just my wife at the end of the day and the mother to my kids. She's my mate. We're friends. You know, we've built out a great life for ourselves and our kids, which is great. And her career has just gone on incredible.
She's proud of her and you.
What she's achieved. You know, when she came into the game at 23, 24, to be a woman, first of all, in a man's game, and back then it was very, very male-oriented, in fact, completely male-oriented. Not only the fact that she was 23, she lied that she was 24 to make her sound a little bit more reputable. And she paved her way, and now, you know, she's the main person people talk about in the game. She's influential. She's obviously running West Ham. She's a baroness, so she's involved in the government. She's what she's achieved is endless, but you know, it's hard graft. It's hard graft and dedication.
Why isn't she Baroness Pesci Salido?
exactly.
is this a little bit of a class going on in England,
yeah.
Maybe? Or?
Yeah, that's a snobby. No, you take your maiden name, whatever it is, you go back to your maiden name, which just becomes Brady, Baroness Brady.
Can't you be Baron Pescasillo, surely?
She always talks about, equal rights for women. And I'm about to go. So hang on a minute. When a man's a sir, the wife becomes
Dame. Lady, or lady is it? Yeah.
And what do I get? So that's the first thing you need to go and discuss. But now, listen, can you imagine? can you never talk to me again.
Hey, Baron, story. I think Craig told me the story a while back, how when you guys were roommates, I think that's when you first met Karen, I believe, and you were sneaking her out of the apartment.
Well, the in and out,
was it? Was that what it was?
Yeah, because I remember phoning Paul and talking to him when, you know, and he's in Birmingham. He's living, I believe you're the shop, above the shops in Birmingham somewhere. Not a great area.
It was horrible.
And you said, hey, do you know who Karen Brady is? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, yeah. Well, she's sneaking up the fire exit. So I said, oh, my God. I said, this is going to end two ways. You marry or have kids and live happily ever after, or you'll never play football ever again.
Yeah.
And even that, tell us about this. Your wife, Karen, she's told you twice, did she not?
And she'll have you at for a profit both times as well.
Did you get a cut of that, buddy?
Yeah, there you go.
Did you cut?
No, I can't get anything. Nah, she. yeah, listen, it's a unique situation. But remember back the first time Barry Fry just, you know, when was the first time? We had just been relegated to League One, from the Championship to League One, what it is now. And Barry Fry come in and he was crazy. And I didn't fancy playing in the division below. So Stoke had come in. I spoke to Joe Jordan at Stoke and they wanted to buy me, so they bought me. But the second time, after I'd gone to Stoke, Birmingham got promoted two seasons later and Barry brought me back. So Barry Fry brought me back. Within 2 or 3 months of Barry being in charge, he was sacked. And Trevor Francis came in. And I'll never forget, Karen and I are married now. And I'm at home and Trevor's having his meeting with Karen at our house. And he had two young boys. So he comes to the front door and I thought, oh, God, it's a bit awkward because he was going for his job interview. And Karen, you look after his two sons. So I'm looking after his two little boys in the kitchen while they're doing their negotiations. And Karen, obviously, first question, she asked, listen, obviously, you realize that Paul's at the club. Are you going to have this? This is going to be a problem. Oh, God, no problem at all. Make him captain. So that's so after he left, Karen said, oh, no, he won't have any problem with you being here. He gets the job. 3 days into his job, he calls me in the office and says, yeah, you need to go, son. I'm bringing Mike Newell and Paul Furlong, and there won't be any position. I was like, you bastard. You gave him the old going to make him captain routine. He was desperate to get me out of the club. Anyway, that was it. So I moved on to, I think it was West Brom then. So, and that season, I think Mike Newell scored 3 goals and I scored 20. So.
Barry Fry, wasn't Barry Fry though? You showed me the documentary, I think, on YouTube, didn't you? Barry Fry negotiating.
Yeah, the one when he was at Peterborough.
That's right. Yeah, it's amazing.
He was
at the Miguel de Souza. That's at Birmingham, I think. There was a documentary.
Yeah,
doing Miguel de Souza. It was just precious.
Yeah, Miguel.
You're never going to get out, mate. You got no chance.
Well, Barry Fry, didn't he? He basically ran everything, didn't he? Like, he would be the coach, he would be signing contracts, he would be the agent's guy, he would deal with.
I think when he was at Barnet, was it Barnet Southend? Yeah, he was doing the law. I'm still friends with Barry. He's hilarious. What a character. If you see the documentary, some of his halftime chats, where he goes nuts, there's throws off. It's England, Mike Bassett, England manager stuff.
Yeah. So funny. Really funny. He's the original Wheeler, and we speak about Harry being like the character. But back in those days, Barry Fry, all those guys, they were like legends of the game. But not only because of their characters, but because of their like training methods, the way they dealt with players, they took shit, halftime talks, just like you never ever get away with that kind of shit nowadays in football. I think that's what gave us a lot of millions back then as younger players and playing for coaches like that, you know.
We did a preseason once. Let me just tell you about, we did a preseason with Barry once. And obviously he was a Wheeler and dealer, come from Southend. He's a real cockney character. And at the time at Birmingham, I think there was myself, Paul Tate, and there was only 3 or 4 actual guys who lived in Birmingham in the team. And the preseason at Dunstable Downs down in London, we're like, hang on a minute, it's Birmingham City. So the three of us used to have to get on a coach, travel 1.5-2 hours down to London for preseason. We went up to this Dunstable Downs, which is this big, huge mountain. And he'd have a deck chair on the top, and he would have a megaphone, and he would just start screaming and just swearing at us. It was like a scene at a zoo. There was a try list. We had like 40 try lists that just turned up. Big fat guys. Who the hell are all these people? And if you ever got up to the top, got an extra day, and you're thinking, this is ridiculous. Some of his methods were just mad. But those kind of characters aren't in the game anymore. But he was entertaining.
Hey, Pesci, I mean, you're managing a lot of managers right now. What are the challenges that you find, or what do they talk about as a manager in modern-day football compared to the guys like Barry Fry?
Nowadays, there is a huge amount of importance on man-to-man management, but it's different man-to-man management. You know, in our day, I think maybe because of the players we were, we had a little bit more about us in terms of we could take criticism, and we had that I'll show you mentality. So if they berated, called you names, I would show, you know, you came up with that, I'll show you, where that approach is gone. You know, they've got to be very different in the way they treat players. Arm around, more often than not, players need an arm around them. But it's recruitment. You know, recruitment is the biggest issue, because trying to find these players, not only do they have to be hungry, they have to have some inner strength as well, because, you know, everybody wants to be professional football. Everybody wants to be the best. If you haven't got that real hunger and that drive and that determination, it's dog world. Football is, you know, it's difficult. And whether you're the bottom fighting, or you're still fighting to get higher, or you're the top trying to win, you need to have that little bit of something different about you. And trying to find that is difficult.
What is the most important thing for a manager, do you think? I mean, we know about the coaching side of it, the technical, tactical side of it, but recruiting, like for a guy like Sean Dyche, right, at Burnley, he can't make many mistakes. Like some of the big clubs, they can afford it.
100%. And Sean is one of ours, one that we look after, and he's meticulous. And it's doing the research. If you look at Burnley, they are not in the same competition as the top teams, and looking at being a different type of player. You know, they're looking at more of a mentally strong. You know, you need to have something a little bit more fire in your belly. Maybe technique is looked at as much, but athleticism, dry, and making sure they're the right characters to fit in with the group. He has a small group, but they're all in it together. And then he has to make sure that when they come in the group, that they add something as opposed to take something away. So he does his research. He speaks to former managers, speaks to former players. I think he speaks to former girlfriends, boyfriends, whatever he can do. He really gets inside the mind to find these players, because he doesn't have finances where he can get a £5 million player wrong. He's got to get it right. And so that's why he gets it right more often than not.
You think of Burnley, I think they're the smallest club to ever play in the Premier League as far as town size. I believe they're like 60,000, something like that. I mean, it is, like you say, a dog-eat-dog world and a difficult world to survive in. And the leagues are below are littered with former Premier League teams that had their moment.
Yeah. He gets fighters, Craig. He gets fighters. His players are never say die.
Yeah, I mean, you really have to. I mean, I remember guys are coming into Ipswich. You have to have guys that you can lose five games in a row, but when you show up for that sixth game, you're still going to put that in the back of your mind and keep driving forward to pick up results. And that's a different type of character itself. Even some of the top players that are used to winning all the time get put into that type of scenario. Wow, it's a different world.
Absolutely. No, you hit the nail on the head, Jeff.
Especially with the exception of Jose Mourinho, who obviously didn't any kind of level, the vast majority of managers have played the game in some capacity. Do you think that is still absolutely key in most cases, that you've got the experience as a footballer than footballers, or do you think that is changing?
I think it's changing because of the likes of Jose Mourinho, but I think it's a huge bonus to have been a former, and the reason I say that is because as soon as you walk through that door, you're judged by footballers. We're horrible people. As soon as they walk in, we're looking for weakness, we're looking for excuses, we're looking for issues. If you've played the game before and you've got a decent reputation, so for example, someone like Frank Lampard turns in to Chelsea, he walks in the door, he's got a reputation, he's got everything, it's all for him to lose, as opposed to having to go in there and trying to win them. Someone like even Arsene Wenger, because I'm friends with David Dean, he talks about that's a difficult transition to come from looking like a school teacher back then to Arsene, very odd, very school teacher scientist looking, to go into that changing with these big characters and win them over. That's already a difficult thing to do. But if you've already played and have that reputation, you've got that. And then if you've got something to back it up, then you're on your way. But if you don't, then footballers, like I said, are horrible, and they'll pick that into
that. I think, sure. The difference between players also is, and managers that played the game, players that have not played the game, some of them, like Jose, get into coaching at a very young age. So if a player is going to play until he's 30, for instance, it's one thing to be coached all that time. but then to transfer into coaching yourself and how to explain and stay on is a completely different world.
I think it's the way you go, guys. I mean, look at certain managers that have been big within the game, like a Graham Souness, a Roy Keane, players that have undoubtedly like top level careers. But when they coach and manage, they try to coach and manage in the same way. And you either have the respect of certain players, but you also lose respect of certain prima donna players that just don't buy into it. And I really feel now with managers, as she said, we can talk about the tactics and all the cognitive stuff and this, but it's how you manage that player now and how you manage that group. And that is a key thing for me. And Jose Mourinho even admitted to himself, he's massive on tactics and whatever, his low block, whatever it is. But man managing every member of that group, and we're not just talking about 1 to 11, we're talking about the key players, which are 12 to 20 as well. It's very, very tough. And these guys are, like Sean Dyche is magnificent at it. The way he builds that team chemistry, the way he brings people in to buy into his way and the team's way of thinking and being successful. Like, that is a huge, huge thing in football nowadays. You can have all the ideas, you can have all the tactics, you can have all the resources you have, but if you don't understand how to manage the player, his mindset, and the group as a whole, see where the different pieces fit in, then you're on a totally lost course straight away.
But how frequently must a manager change his style as well? Sean Dyche right now is perfect for Burnley. Yeah, but a lot of people think, well, you know, at some point he'll outgrow Burnley. But will he be as effective at, say, Everton, for example, as he would be at Burnley? Must he adapt there? How often must he adapt?
I think he would be successful. I really do, because Sean is a student of the game as well. You know, you listen to him speak, he sounds like a thug, doesn't he? He's not even looking at him, he's a rugged guy. So you don't expect that. But he's a really intelligent bloke. And he's a student of the game, like I said, and he wants to improve. And at Burnley, and that's why I say he has to buy people that he needs to bring in players that are going to suit that style of football. And that style of football gets him a certain spot, which he knows he can't go any further. So that's as far as he can go at Burnley. And I think if they do exceed their expectation, then that's great. But if he was to go somewhere like Everton, he would adapt. He would adapt, because then he's looking at a different type there. He could still use some of the type of football he likes to play. But then when you start dealing with better players, you become a better team. So he would adapt. He would most certainly adapt. But he would still.
Pesci, with English managers, a lot of them end up at clubs like Burnley and have to play a certain way to suit their strengths. Why is it that people will not think that these managers can adapt at a different club with bigger players, better players, more technical players?
It's not fashionable, Craig. It's not fashionable. And that's the long and short of it. It's not fashionable. Again, Chrissy Hughton's one of ours. And what Chris has done over his career, he's been fabulous. He's gone Norwich, got him promoted, Birmingham, got them in promoted, and then got them into the Europa League. Mm-hmm. And Newcastle, he got them. He's done an amazing job, even at Brighton. You know, Brighton are in trouble this year, and they got rid of him prematurely. But again, he could only do what he could do with the players at his disposal, what he could afford. But someone like him, how could he not be in And when you look at the top six, they're not looking for an Englishman. They're looking for a European. It's trendier. Having someone who speaks with a bit of an accent and someone like a, you know, when they speak, it's been broken English. Unfortunately, that appeals to these chairmen. Mm-hmm. And that one. But it's a shame, because who knows what these guys could achieve if they were in these teams. Now, okay, you know, David Moyes gone to West Ham, and I love Dave. I think he's brilliant. But he had a rough time at Man U, so maybe that's put people off too. You know, he's done a good job at Everton. He's gone to a big club and it didn't work. But I'll be honest with you, it didn't work for Jose either. And honestly, it was not going to work for anyone for a good certain time, because that Fergie effect was in there. That was kind of a poison chalice. You would never turn that job down, because it's an amazing job. But it was a total rebuild that needed doing. Whoever went in there was going to find it difficult, regardless. If Klopp went in there, so unfortunately, that maybe hindered British managers as such, thinking they can't do it at that level. But I'm a firm believer they can. They can't, just not given that opportunity. Someone like Sean, you know, even a team like Everton, we're not interested. You can have Everton not be interested. Fair enough, they've gone on Ancelotti, who's got an amazing track record. But a team like Everton, not looking at a Sean Dyche, like, what is your next step? It's difficult.
What about, I mean, we're going to talk about the book in the room. Racism is a big part of what the conversation is around. Chris Hughton is one of the only black coaches in the league system. There is very few, and we talk about the diversity we see on the football field, which is really, but once these players retire, they want to move, black players and minorities want to move into coaching. It's staggering, the percentages and the lack of opportunities for black players. So we're the good enough to play, but they're not good enough to manage in the Premier League. They're not good enough in board rooms. They're not good enough to be in FAs and in top positions in football. That is a problem for me. It's a problem of racism. Maybe, and I've said it before, I don't think it's that clubs are openly racist, but the system is. The system is letting them down because guys like Chris Hughton are few and far between.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I was listening to, I think it was John Barnes today on the radio talking about it. Today there was a piece in the Daily Mail about Michael Johnson, who's a pal of mine who I played with at Derby in Birmingham. And Michael Johnson, in order to get a job, had to go manage the national team of Guyana. They did a great job at Guyana, got them into the Gold Cup for the first time in their history. And he is the most qualified manager we have in this country in terms of every badge going. He's got business degree, he's got a master's, he's got every degree going, and he can't even get an interview. So he's decided that that's not for him, the management side. And fortunately, he's got himself a job with the under-21s with Gareth Southgate in the England setup. But why can't he get a job? You know, he says he tried everything. And I was helping him as well, trying, you know, League Two, League One. Wouldn't even get a response when he'd send his CV in. Yeah, there is a fundamental problem there, serious fundamental problem. You know, that's something the LMA are trying to, the League Men Association are trying to improve and educate. And I think the PFA has their work to cut out to change the perception as well. A lot of these clubs too, you know, clubs who are employing.
I think Michael actually got that job through Jason Roberts, who's another one who had to get a job with CONCACAF.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
and he helped get the job in Guyana. Yeah. So it's interesting that
when you look at his qualifications, like I said, he is the. It was in the paper today. He's the most qualified manager in this country in terms of qualifications.
And let's be fair. If he was white, he would have got his chance.
Well, you would at least expect to get a callback or interview. Like I said, you put in CVs and they wouldn't say thanks, but no thanks, nothing.
Is the only solution in the Rooney Rule, right, in the NFL, where you have to, you know, interview a certain number of minorities for any position, I believe, must that?
But it's a shame. You speak to some of these black men, they say it's a shame that it almost puts a farce in it that they're being chosen because they have to.
Yeah.
They don't want to be because they have to. They want to be because they're qualified. Nothing they should, you know. It's unfair.
But where do we start, Pesci, to make better? Like, how does the system?
No, I think I think what James said. That's a good start. It's a good start.
Guys, a good start as well is, and it's been far too late in my opinion, is what the FA have done. And I know Michael as well, who's got the under 21 assistant job now. At every level, at every age group now, they try to bring in a coach or an assistant from the background. And even at the younger ages, there's the former players that are now helping out as an assistant or even a coach. And I feel this is going to transcend into the clubs in the league. It has to, because you think about the diversity of the football league, the 92 clubs we have in England, and the amount of black players or Asian players, whatever it is that we have in these teams now, to only be coached or be trained by a white person, and I'm not calling it racism as a bigger picture, but I'm saying the respect side of especially younger players, younger black players now seeing a staff member, someone they can relate to, someone they can lean on, not only for football reasons, but off the field or on the field situations that have happened. But now they can lean on someone that they feel comfortable with is only going to help the game in general. So I'm really pleased. I was back at St. George's last year doing my A license, that the FA have now brought that in. But it's not too late, in my opinion, far too late. But at least they're doing something. It's a small step that's hopefully going to move us in a bigger direction moving forwards. And hopefully it's going to help our younger black players feel more comfortable and want to represent England and want to represent their clubs in a better way.
Well, I mean, like we've seen in recent years on the field and within the stands, the issues. This is a societal thing, right? And football is the microcosm of society. And until society gets its ass in order, why should we expect any different from football, from sports, unfortunately, right? And that's kind of where we're at right now, I think. But perhaps, you know, like you said, the conversation is changing. We're seeing that currently, you know, around the world. And maybe that will, you know, translate to sports as well.
It just drives me crazy that the people that don't quite understand or what's going on with these protests, it points me in a way that they'll concentrate on the bad actors. But if they really think deeply about what is going on and just the issues that we talked about in football, there are much bigger issues in racism outside of football. And to try to deal with that, to solve that problem, is a difficult task for anybody, but needs to be done moving forward.
Well, let's lighten the topic somewhat now, shall we? Pesci, is it to negotiate a deal for a manager or a footballer?
Definitely a manager. Managers are a lot more easygoing with it.
Are they more involved?
You what, sorry?
Are they more involved themselves in negotiations?
Yeah, they're more involved in negotiations. And usually when they get a job, they're desperate to work. And they want the opportunity. It's a matter of once they get in there, it's given the instance. Not, our job is not only just to get them in there and organize contracts and what have you, but we have an aspect where they need mentoring. If they need help with scouting, we do all sorts of different ranges. You know, we want, when we put a manager in a job, we don't just leave them like you do with a football and say, get on with it. We want to help them and make sure they have everything in their power to be successful. So it's a whole, we have a whole team that work around them, help them with players, negotiation with players, finding players, scouting players, speaking to, if they're at a lower division team, speak to our within the higher levels of play and get cheap for them to help their team out. So there's a whole bunch of different aspects to do. And it's a lot more fun. It's a lot more engaged with it. But yeah, more fun to deal with.
What a weird world that it must be. I mean, you're in that negotiation room, right? And you're breaking down a deal for your client, knowing full well that you might be back there 6 months later after he's been fired, right? I mean, that's the one job that you know at some point it's not going to end well.
Absolutely. So I know exactly, like, and it's humiliating. It's horrible. I don't care what you say. It's not a nice feeling. And I think the shelf life now for managers, prior to this was 11 months. That's the average span of a manager. So it's not, it's not a learned long-term thing, which is a shame, because if you're a manager and you want to create something, You don't necessarily have the time to do that. So it's the present. You know, you get in there and you've got to win games from day one. So you're not looking at developing your academy, developing players that are going to come through or having an identity. You can't, because you've got to go in there and you've got to just start winning. So it's tough. It's a really, really tough. It's not as easy as anyone makes it out.
No, it wouldn't be, because if you're really, truly, say, you know, you got of 6 years, you're not going to go anywhere. It would be so much different for a manager, wouldn't it? I mean, trying to build everything from the ground up, but you don't have that time. Like you say, you've got to get results yesterday, and you're probably 5 losses away at any time of being sacked.
Yeah. And that's why I have a problem with it, say, an identity. It's impossible to get a manager to have an identity, because he doesn't have time to have his own identity. He's got to come in and win games. So that's why becoming a manager, that's why, like Danny said, you're a psychologist. You've got to get into their heads right away and learn what makes them tick, because you've got to hit the ground running. You've got to get in there You're a salesman. You want these players to believe in what you're talking about so they go out there and perform and you win games from day one.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, I know generally speaking at the upper levels, you guys are paid pretty well, right? The further down you go, these guys aren't paid particularly well and it's short term. I mean, how difficult is that? I mean, obviously every man knows what he's getting into, but it has to be awfully frustrating for you as a representative saying, man, give my client something because you know in a year from now he could be out of work.
Yeah. At the same time, though, when you're managing, because I manage Burn Albion League 2 for reasons, and as you go down, you're dealing with different types of players as well. You know, you're dealing with players that that are desperate to improve and trying to get to a higher echelons in football. And they're easier to deal with. I think it's a hell of a lot more difficult the higher you go up dealing with prima donnas and players who think they're great or players who are on 50 a week and are playing like a £2,000 a week player or a £500 a week player. Those are the difficult ones. But when I, or even at Burton, you know, we had kids on buttons, really, but they would do anything for you because they knew that, you know, if this manager becomes successful, he might bring me along with him, or he might speak to one of his pals who manages a bigger club and say, I'm a good player. So a lot of different players in the lower levels, so they can do their all. They might not have the talent, they might not be as gifted, but a lot of them have, you know, really good attitudes and really want to improve. So
didn't
they're easy to deal with.
Didn't you try to buy a Jamie Vardy?
Yeah, I'll tell you about that. That was Jamie Vardy. I've watched him. He was at Stocksbridge Steels. He was playing non-league at Stocksbridge Steels. He'd been released from Sheffield Wednesday. I went to watch. He went up to Hartlepool, and he was playing in the conference at Hartlepool. And I went to watch him a couple of times. And he looked like a player. He'd scored every time I went to see him play. He was really quick. And the only issue I had is he was tagged. He was electronic tagged. He'd done something wrong. He was living in the basement of his parents' house. He was tagged. And Burton Albion is a family-run club. Ben Robinson, who was the chairman, it was his club, money man. He started the club from nothing. So, I mean, it was family run. His daughter was the chair. She was the chairman. His son ran another part of the club. So it was so important that, you know, that the club was respected that way. It was family club. So I was petrified. I was like, what do I do? How do I sell this to the chairman? I just said, you know, he is tagged. He's like, we don't really want that type of player at our club. And I said, he is very, very good. And he's apologetic. And, you know, it comes off in 3 months' time. He said, well, what do they want for him? And I negotiated. I actually spoke to the kid. I spoke to Jamie at his con. He didn't want much. We could afford what he wanted. Spoke to Hartlepool and Halifax. And Halifax wanted, I think, 10 or 15,000 pounds. That would have been my record signing. I did not spend money. Wow. What do I do? So I speak to his agent, John Morris, it was. And I think he was 24. He was a late bloomer. He was 24. And I said to John, you know, 10, 15 grand, that's a bit much. Can you knock it down? He said, Pesh, I'm telling you, this kid's going to play for England. I was like, John, do me a favor. He said, Halifax, he's 24. Do me a favor. He's got no chance. He's good. He ain't that bloody good. He ended up going to Fleetwood for, I think, 50 grand. And so I missed out on him. But he turned out and played for us. Oh, my God. He rang me. I just say, hey, by the way, told you.
That's amazing. Leicester ended up paying a million for him, didn't they? And he was the first million-pound player out of the non-league, I think, was he? Yeah.
Fleetwood. Right.
Yeah.
What a story, though. What a story he was.
So I missed out on Jamie Vardy. He could have kept me the job.
There's always that player, right? There's always that player. Everybody has that player that they could have got and could have changed everything, right?
That's it. It was sacked 2 months later.
Yeah. Players, you know what? Every time you send the players out there on the field, you got they're responsible for your future. And as a coach, you send them out and, you know, it's out of your hands. At that point, you've done all your work prior to you. Just hope that they could keep you in your job.
It was a lot of fun.
He teaches a kid from the academy and he's like, you know, 15 years old, are you thinking, oh man, he better not pan out?
every time. You have to remember as well, we're in discussions with either the second team and the first team. There's a broader discussion going on. It's just not my decision. Where I think when you're at the pro level, it's the head coach and the president, the manager, that are deciding that. But players, it's one of the toughest things to release a player because you're basically, you're killing their dream. At least in England, you still have 91 other clubs that you can possibly go and try and chase your dream still. Where here, theoretically, we have three clubs. Ottawa, we can include in that as well, and CPL coming in. But it's tough on them. It's tough on them. But sometimes we're releasing them for a reason that they're not good enough. The other times we're releasing them for a reason that they're going to get into the first team. So we want to give them the opportunity to try and go elsewhere while they are still young. Mm-hmm. Do a good job of that. I mean, the only player I would say that we've kind of released, not released, but let go and moved on to bigger and better things is Mark Anthony Kay. But as a club, we decided, or the first team decided, that he wasn't going to get into our first team at the time. And fair play to the kid. He had to go a different pathway, and USL to Louisville, and then on to Orlando, and on to LA, where he's done very, very well. I mean, you've got to give a lot of credit to the kids. That shows a lot of resilience sometimes, that they need to face a little bit of adversity before moving on. And that's what we want to see in a lot of our younger players.
I guess late bloomers must be every coach's work from there, right?
Some of the top players. I mean, you look at like Ian Wright, Les Ferdinand, guys like that that were very late bloomers. Jamie Vardy, we're speaking about, got released by Sheffield Wednesday. Didn't take it to heart. He went to play for his local team in Yorkshire somewhere, ended up at Halifax, and he just went through a different pathway. And sometimes it's not always going to be linear where we think, okay, he's gone from academy to the reserves, done really well in first team. Sometimes you have to pop around to different spots and find your way.
I think you'll see more of that, because I think academies, sometimes here in England, the academies can breed a different type of player, and sometimes going that route makes you a little bit harder, makes you a little rough around the edges, because you got to fight and you got to scrap, and you know, playing in some of these non-league, you need to grow up pretty quick because they'll kick seven bells at you. So we might be seeing a bit more of that.
Yeah, it's a really good point, because in so many cases now, kids are making the first team so early, right? And they're getting, they're driving around and they're 20 years of age. And what have they actually earned at this point? How do you control that ego? I mean, it's going to be awful.
Yeah, it's tough. Well, you've got kids, kids at Chelsea Academy, they're in 20, 30 grand a week, not kicked a ball yet. It's tough.
Well, I'm a late bloomer. I'm still hoping that my career can take off on the field. But there aren't too many 46-year-old professional footballers, so...
Well, it's actually dreams over charms.
The dream ended when I was about 12. I realized that actually I'm pretty crap. It's not going to work out. Anyway, listen, fellas, time has flown by. Pesci, we could talk to you for a long time. Let's get you back on real soon.
Please,
hopefully,
yeah,
we'll have some games to talk about. June 17th, I think, is the kickoff of the Premier League, as we know right now. But thanks so much.
Pleasure.
Enjoy.
I might be able to go to the West Games, which would be nice. It'll probably be just me and Karen, but I might be able to actually go.
Wait, well, listen, we're going to bring this podcast on the road one day. We are. And we'll be definitely using your contacts to help us accomplish that, especially with Lady Baroness Karen. Thanks, mate. Really enjoyed this. We'll chat
pleasure.
Soon.
Pleasure. Anytime, guys. Nice talking.
Thanks,
Pesh. Thanks, Ali.
See you, guys.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Stay safe.
Paul Prescott-Salido. If you look at Pesh's his career records, man, he scored a shitload of goals at a few clubs, didn't he? You must have known it from day one, eh, Craig?
Played against him on a few occasions, and he, my old roomie, he didn't give me a second's rest. He knew shit on the ball, and he closed me down as quickly as he could, and he was a little pest. But I tell you what, Pesci, you got a lot of goals when you think about it, just out of working hard, and the footballing gods always.
That's it.
Give you something back.
My old man used to say, listen, you might have an absolute stink, but just run around. People appreciate you running around. There's so many times, like you said, just chasing a ball back, and it was kicked and hit me in the back of the head and went in the back of the net. I scored, I think, 4 or 5 goals, where it's literally just hit me and gone in. And against Nottingham Forest when I was at Derby, I chased it back and it hit a coffee cup. If you watch it, it's on What Happened Next. It was a windy day, and it sits up on a coffee cup, and Barry Rowe, the goalkeeper, kicks the coffee cup, and the ball just loops up and lands at my foot and open net. And that was Derby. Derby.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Just chase it back. Just run around. That's all you got to do.
Hey, Pej, I got to ask you about Stephen Bywater. He was a goalkeeper of mine at West Ham. Young kid coming up. You ended up playing with him at Derby County. What a character that guy is.
He was my roommate. All the keepers, all the wrong-end goalkeepers I got, roommates. He's mental. He's happy mental. I did a podcast with him last week because we were in the same Derby team and got promoted to the Premier League. I'm telling stories about him. Oh, he was precious, Steve. He's crazy, absolutely crazy. Read his profiles of things he got up to. But what a great guy! Really,
yeah. I remember we were driving back on the bus and we were playing cards or something, and there was a fly flying around the bus, kind of in front of Steve's nose, and he's like, "Oh, that poor thing." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" And he goes, "Well, we're traveling a mile an hour. Like, just think how fast I thought him flap his mace."
So bad.
Oh, he was an absolute classic. And then, you know, he's a bloody good swimmer, right? And I don't know if you know this. And he was talking about it and how fast it was. And Neil Ruddock was like, "Yeah, you're full of shit. Like, I'll swim it. When we get to the hotel on the Friday at away game, we're going to have a race. We're going to go to the swimming pool. And we're going to have a race because there's no way you're that fast." So Ruddock's going to swim him and race him. Well, they do. And I have never seen the outside of like Olympic level swim as fast as Steve Bywater. He was unbelievably fast.
You've got some serious OCD, ADHD. He's got them all. He's mad.
Oh.
He's becoming too. Billy Davis called him fat because he had a little bit of a spare tire when he came to West Ham. I don't think he was playing as much when he came to Derby. So he'd come in every morning, 7 o'clock, and he would sprint around the training ground. And I mean sprint. And he'd come back and he'd start yelling at us. He'd be poking his stomach. He'd be saying, "You fat bastard. You fat bastard." And then he'd go for another run. He's like, "What are you doing, boss?" He'd come back drenched. And he'd be talking to his belly. Like, poking it.
I remember when he first showed up at West, he was young, had an injury, I think. Certainly Ludo had just come, McCloskey had come off an injury. And Ludwig McCloskey, best long-distance runner for a goalkeeper I'd ever seen. Like, he was always at the front of the team, which was so disappointing.
Really?
Yeah. Big Ludo. He was a great long-distance runner. And he was at the front. You can imagine us, me and Shaka and David James and Bywater, holding up the back of the – because we're allowed to. We're the goalkeepers. Yeah, you know? Yeah. And here's Ludo, 33, just at the front of the line. Anyway, when Steven showed up, they said to him, "Oh, we would go for the physio. Go for a run with Ludo." And he's like, "Well, it should be easy. I'm young and Ludo's an old bastard and I'll be fine here." Ludo lapped him around the training ground. He couldn't keep up. Ludo just flew and he was just coming by. He was trying to stay up with him and he couldn't. And he's just like, "What?" You can imagine how frustrated Bywater was.
He first kid, Ludo, so we obviously love Ludo.
Love Ludo. Ludo is a Ludo is a,
his first son, Ludo.
Is that right? Not Craig, eh?
Yeah. No. Name's daughter there.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God. Yeah, he was a character. He was a beauty. You know, there was a game. I was aware of the Gold Cup 2000, and Bywater, Shaka was injured, so Bywater went in and played against Bradford. And it was a classic at Upton Park, 5-4 West Ham win. Well, goals are going in left, right, and center. Dean Saunders is scoring, blah, blah, blah. And when West Ham took the 5-4 lead, Les Celio, I get back, he's like, "Craig, I've got to tell you what happened." He goes, "Fucking Bywater, he's watching the replay on the screen to the left. He's standing there watching the replay." Meanwhile, Dean Saunders sees him, and he pings it from the halfway line.
Oh, no.
And everybody in the stadium's like, "Ah!" And Bywater's like watching the replay. And he looks up. And even Steve says, he goes, "I had no chance of getting there, but it missed the net." It's like, if that went in, he would have never played football again. He was done.
Right. Well, he didn't learn his lesson because he was at the last season before when Burton were in the championship. He was at Burton. He was a goalkeeper at Burton. And I went up to Derby to do the TV for Derby Burton match. And I'm in the box, which is behind the goal, but high up. and the game's gone. He kept turning around and going, "Oh my gosh, you know, like you get away." I'm like, "Watch the game, mate." And the same thing happened. They were on an attack, and he was like trying to talk to me, and I was like, "Turn around, man."
Oh yeah. And then another one is it shouldn't be funny, but when Les passed away, he and Shaka and Bywater, a few other goalkeepers, Jim Leighton was involved. We carried Les's coffin. So Les, the guy said, "Don't be afraid of the weight of the coffin." Well, we're carrying it, and Bywater says to me, he goes, "I thought Les was going to fucking die. This is me fucking die." Yeah, what is it? Why is it so heavy? And it's like filled with rain, for Christ's sake. Les, he's a great guy too.
All right, listen, I hate to close things off, boys, but I will be, we are going to be running out of disk space and battery time. And one right now who's ignoring my texts at the moment for some reason. It's going to be pretty soon. Telling me, please wrap it up. What's that?
Not good. You guys, keep
you don't show it anyways. Great. We don't know whatever. We just tape it and watch it ourselves.
Oh, cool.
I'll send you the link. Pesh, I'll send you the link.
You. Can you get your missus to retweet it? Because she's got a lot of followers, a lot more than we do. So yeah. It would really help us.
Yeah.
Canada's number one soccer podcast.
There you go. We'll do that.
All right, fellas. Thanks so much. That was a lot of fun. Hey, Peach, are you still there?
He's gone home. He just
Who?
He's
gone.
Picture himself. So it looked like he was still there. Yeah.
He's still there. He's still there. We're just listening to this. Let's get Stephen Bywater on at some point.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Thanks so much. That was fun. We're back same time, same place next week. Our thanks to Amsterdam Brewers and the Dean Blundell Show. Wonga, Jeff Deitch. Craig, Pesci, cheers for everything.
What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime, the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening and back to the show.